Governor Branstad, this is Matt Bevin here in Kentucky. It's a few hours before I'm going to be speaking before you. I promise I'm going to shave before then, clean myself up a little bit, but I happen to be on set of a movie being shot here in Kentucky this afternoon and ran into a friend of mine who was going to try to join me, is not able to, but wanted to wish you a happy birthday.
I was going to shave too, but I decided not to. Governor, we're making a film here right behind us, and we're thinking about you. We're sending our love. Congratulations. We know you are a legend. And we know you're an American hero, and we wish you the happiest of birthdays. God bless you.
Happy birthday. That literally was about 6 hours ago, and I was going to try to bring him with me to sneak him in here, but he could not get away. They were filming some things. I have a couple other things I want to, if you will humor me for a moment, thank you for the welcome. I have a couple other gifts that I want to provide to you. Of this Bell Company, and so that is indeed true. This little company was started by my great-great-great-grandfather in 1832, and I will tell you the reason it's the last bell maker in North America. There's a reason for that. I won't ask how many of you have ever bought a bell. Actually, let me ask a question. How many of you have ever bought a bell? Yeah, exactly. Thanks for nothing for the rest of you. In an electronic day and age, there's not a lot of need for these anymore. But here is one that I made at this little factory that has the inaugural seal of Kentucky and was from our election just a year ago, Governor Branstad. If you ever, that's what an American-made bell sounds like right there. But wait, there's more. Don't answer yet. It's like, you know, I'm going to come out with the fabulous Ginsu steak knives in just a moment here. Known for your corn, and you do well with your corn. But we do things with corn as well in Kentucky. You burn a little more in the gas tank. We also turn it into liquid and burn it, but in a little different way. Several things here. I'm going to leave them down here. Things half-baked, I'll tell you. Well, maybe we do, but you know what I mean. And I'll hold these up here, and hopefully you'll be able to see them. We have several things. We take corn and turn it into a liquid that is exported around the world, is increasingly enjoyed by people, and it's known as bourbon. And there are people outside of Kentucky that will tell you they make bourbon. They don't. They make something else that tries to be bourbon, but it's not bourbon. But that's all right. They're trying. And that helps. There are three bottles here that are etched and personalized for you, sir. The first matches your balloons. The second, which when we did that, I thought it's kind of a cool rendition, a caricature, but it didn't. It looked a little creepy almost on the bottle, and I hate to say that because you're a good-looking man, and so I figured the least we could do is actually get the real you. So we got one of those. Absolutely. And it says happy birthday, September 19th, 2016. November 19th, sorry. I had a little trouble reading. And then there is one more here which has no wording at all, but it is a rendition of your beautiful state capital. Which I thought you would like. And because these are the type of things that while they're so full of goodness, you wouldn't want to open them because they're so beautifully engaged. So I got you one that has nothing on it, and you can enjoy that one. And so that one's just for you. And I would say, for your House majority and your Senate majority, I would think you might be able to put this to good use to start this next session. But I will put these down here in case I get animated and knock them off or something. That would be bad. But their little rednecks will say, and it's appropriate. I'm from Kentucky. It's a little redneck sticking their little way above the, there we go. That's going to get me into trouble back home. But But it's true enough, by Jiminy. I will say this. Thank you for having me here. Thank you for being here. Truly. I mean, it's 30 degrees cooler than it was a couple days ago, and each of you probably had other things to do and places to be, and yet you chose to be here tonight. So thank you for coming. Thanks for coming from every single corner of Iowa to be here, and some of you from other states as well. Thank you for coming here to celebrate an extraordinary man. I'll tell you, I've gotten to know your governor in the last year. I've only been in politics for a year. I'd never previously been elected to anything politically prior to being governor. And I just, like so many in this room, became a little weary of pumping money into a system and seeing it get wasted and thought, maybe I should try to offer an alternative. And so I weighed in, and in the course of that, I was getting elected in an off year. 2015 was the new guy, anytime at the RGA or the NGA or what have you. And very quickly, Governor Branstad took me under his wing, and just a great deal of advice, an amazing man, an amazing amount of history and knowledge and appreciation for those things, and just an incredible mentor to me in ways you haven't even fully appreciated, sir, and I just am grateful to you for the invitation. Kim Reynolds, you are outstanding. Where did you go, Kim? Right here. You have got an unbelievable lieutenant governor who came to Kentucky and worked on our behalf when we were running for office, working with our lieutenant governor, and was just absolute. She's as joyful every time I've ever seen her. I don't know what it is that you eat, but I'll tell you, truly, we're grateful. It's probably corn, but this helps too. But I'm just saying. But in all seriousness, the two of you, I mean, modeling as you do for what good governance looks like, what it can look like, for you all for electing them year after year, thank you all for this invitation and for being here to celebrate this night with all of us together. I was struck as we heard the invocation, as we listened to the national anthem, how blessed we are. You think about this. I mean, not only think about just even the collective breath of fresh air that has come into America in the last 2 weeks. There is. I mean, is this a good night to be an Iowan? Is this a good night to be an American? You bet it is. You bet it is. This is an incredible time to be alive in America, to be here in the heartland of America, and how blessed we are to live in the land of the free and the home of the brave. It's more than a song. You think about the sacrifice that has been made. You think about our ability to open this and to pray in the name of Jesus Christ, and we don't worry about what's going to happen to us when we leave this place. We don't worry about being targeted for that. We are blessed beyond measure in the United States of America. And you are blessed here in Iowa with a recognition of, because you're more connected than so many in America, to the core values, the fundamental Judeo-Christian principles and work ethic and self-reliance and love of liberty and appreciation for the rule of law that this nation was built on. The greatness of this nation was founded in communities like this, in states like this, in this nation. Like nowhere else, we enjoy these luxuries, these privileges, these rights, these inalienable rights that were in fact endowed by our Creator, and things that we take often for granted. And I would encourage you tonight, please don't take these for granted. I think we recognized a couple weeks ago how slippery this is, how close we were coming to losing our grasp on this noble experiment that was put in place 240 years ago. We are blessed indeed, but this sacrifice that has been made for this to exist is extraordinary, extraordinary. 1.5 million Americans have given their lives in uniform to defend this flag. This flag is four colors. I mean, you think about this. It's just a piece of cloth on the one hand. It's red, white, and blue thread and cloth. It has some gold tassel around the edges. But it symbolizes something extraordinary. It symbolizes something far greater than any individual man or woman who ever wore a uniform to defend it. It symbolizes the very greatness of the things that we were just discussing. But 1.5 million people, many of them Iowans. More than a quarter of a century, I was an active duty Army officer, and I served with a man who was an Iowan, who became a very good friend of mine. His name is Stuart Anderson. Stuart Anderson was killed in Iraq in 2006. His picture now hangs in your capital on a wall with a whole lot of other faces, people I didn't know. But I did know Stuart, and he left a wife, and he left two young daughters who are now young women who grew up without a dad. That's the greatness of America. That's the sacrifice that I hope when we leave here tonight we realize is something worth fighting for. The greatness of America is worth everything we have to preserve it. It truly is. And I would say this as well. The amount of passion that our founders, when they pledged their lives, fortunes, and sacred honors, laid out, giving some or all of those things. They didn't do that as they were running for political office. That was not a bumper sticker, lives, fortunes, sacred honor, vote for me. They weren't trying to get elected to something. Every one of them gave some or all of those things. I hope that within us there is some willingness for the sake of the next generation to give some modern day equivalent of the same. We owe nothing less. How could we imagine that we would be the first generation that would be able to ride the coattails of those that preceded us? How is it that we believe that we would be the first generation that would be required to give nothing? I know some of you, when I first stood up here and you heard me just mention, you're like, who's that guy? And I appreciate that. None of you would know me, although I have been to this state often some years ago. My brother lived here, actually. My brother's like a natural disaster magnet, so you know what year he lived here. He did, 1993. He also lived in Charleston, South Carolina, when Hugo came through and devastated that. He lived in Jacksonville when the entire city was on fire. He was in San Francisco the last major earthquake they had, so I'm really not kidding. You don't want him in your state. I love him. He's great. But he lived here for a number of years. And Iowa is special. I used to come and visit him at that time. Several years ago, I took my children out of school for an entire year. We drove 26,000 miles around America. We visited a lot of places, including here in Iowa. Went to a place. This was long before I had anything to do with politics. I think it's called the Number 2 Hamburger Inn. Something like that. It was a number and hamburger. And there was pictures of everybody that apparently that's ever run for political office in America has eaten there. And I remember as we were leaving there, and my kids will tell you this, I grew up in a pretty simple way, 250 people out in the country raising crops and animals, no stoplights. We didn't even have schools or post offices or stores where I lived. But that said, we certainly didn't have parking meters. And so even now, the idea of paying to park just bugs me fundamentally. As a result of this, I try to be somewhat thrifty and make sure that I don't overpay. So I cut it a little close, and I know how much time we have before I got to get back there. And I was leaving the Number 2 Hamburger Inn, and as I was leaving, I could see, literally, if you come out, there's like this parking lot, sort of open area, and then there's a street over there. And I was parked over there, and I looked over, and son of a gun, there was a guy writing me a ticket. I said, really? This doesn't seem like a town that should have somebody who's that on the ball. But it maybe had been like 2 or 3 minutes, and here he was writing me a ticket. And so I didn't want to be the idiot that runs and yells, so I walked quickly. And by the time I got there, he'd already written it. But I will tell you, he was so gracious, cut us a break. I explained that we were here spending tourist dollars and that we were trying to help. And he was so gracious, he said, listen, just be a little more mindful and what have you. But that's the kind of reputation you have. You're good people. You're decent people. It's an honor to be here with you. I was reminded, as I was told, I had a few minutes to kind of introduce myself to you, give you a few thoughts on what I thought might be worth taking away as we left here. I was reminded of a third grade teacher who asked all of her students to draw a picture with anything they wanted. So she gave them all a piece of paper, and they were drawing pictures, and she circulated around amongst their desks, and she came to the desk of little Sally and looked over her shoulder, and she looked at little Sally, and Sally was drawing a picture, and the teacher could not figure out what that was, and she said, Sally, what is that you're drawing a picture of? And Sally said, well, I'm drawing a picture of God. Her teacher said, well, Sally, you know, nobody knows what God looks like. And little Sally said, well, they will in a minute. And so I don't know if in a minute or in 10 or 15 I can truly articulate, you know, who it is that I am, what brought me to this point, and what, again, I would hope you would take away. But I will try to leave you with a couple of things. It's interesting. We have just come through a very interesting time politically in our lives. And I had occasion to speak with a few folks even before we sat down tonight about this new breeze that seems to be blowing through America, this sense of hope and optimism that frankly doesn't exist like any time in our lifetimes, with the possible exception of 1980 for most of us. And I'll speak for myself. I mean, that was the first time I remember America being in a funk, being in this sense of malaise and hopelessness. But I'll tell you, the world, even more than in 1980, needed America to pull itself up by the bootstraps and get back on track. It really did. And this is what the American people have done. The American people spoke a couple weeks ago and have given us an opportunity to regroup in a blank sheet of paper, an opportunity for the Senate, and you're going to hear from one of our finest senators in a moment, and for the House and for our president to work together. There's a passage in Ecclesiastes 3, that talks about a season and a purpose, that there is a season for everything and a purpose for everything. We've come through a tremendously tumultuous season. What then is the purpose? What is it that we should be about? You all, more than most people here in Iowa, have the ability to move the needle. You literally wag the political dog of America every 4 years at a minimum, and even in between. You are the heartbeat of so much of the way the sentiment unfolds. I would encourage you to seize that opportunity, to take it seriously, but recognize that with this level of responsibility comes an opportunity, and power comes a level of responsibility. I would encourage you to seize that responsibility. Winston Churchill, who was, as we all know, the man who followed a man, Neville Chamberlain, that was sort of meandering aimlessly as the world burned. And he rose up at a time when the world desperately needed leadership. And in hindsight, people often referred to Winston Churchill as the Lion of England. And he said, "I'm not the lion." He said, "The people of England are the lion." He said, "But history has called upon me to deliver the roar." And I'll tell you, the history of the world calls upon the people of Iowa to deliver the roar. Every 4 years, we ask you, what should the roar sound like? Who are the people we should take seriously? I encourage you, you're the folks who care enough to have come here tonight. So I'm preaching somewhat to the choir, but every one of you knows 1, 3, 5, 10, 50, 100 people that should be, that could be, that might otherwise be as engaged if somebody would encourage them to do them, remind them of the fragility of what we have. This is what I would challenge you to do, especially to you young people. If you're a young person in this room, I encourage you, in a world that is sending you an incredible amount of mixed messages, where we're telling you that up is down and right is wrong and in is out, to recognize the fact that it's not as simple as that there is absolute right and wrong, that not everything is morally relative, and that whatever you feel like doing is okay. The world is going to seed because of that kind of thinking. And we have abdicated increasingly as a people in Iowa, in Kentucky, in America. We have abdicated our responsibility for frankly taking ownership of these things we've been blessed with. Taking ownership of our own families, our own communities, our own churches and civic organizations, our own schools. We have abdicated this to the government, and the government is like water, and it will find the cracks. It will fill in. If we abdicate something, the government will find a way to fill in, to the detriment, frankly, of so many of the things that we need and want and the things that we remember once were. We have an obligation to defend and to preserve. And to you young people, I would encourage you, know what you believe. And to you older people like myself and older still, I would encourage you the same. Know what you believe. Liberalism is so often dependent upon sarcasm, cynicism, mockery, shame, ridicule. And we allow it to move us. I don't understand this. For those who didn't see this coming, every public address that I gave, every interview that I gave, and I say this telling you and not minding, I never endorsed our current president-elect. And yet I probably made a better case for him every time I spoke than many who had. For what it's worth, I've never endorsed anybody ever, so I'll put it in that category. But I will say this, you could see this coming. You could see it coming because he was touching the electorate. But I encourage those of you who are conservative to know what you believe and why you believe it, because liberals will, they depend on the sarcasm and the hate and the vitriol and the shame to make us shut our mouths. Don't shut your mouths. If you know that something is right, stand on this. And if you're a young person in particular, be bold. The world more than ever, America more than ever, Iowa more than ever needs shepherds. More shepherds and less sheep. Everybody. When you have a day like 2 days ago and it's sunny and it's 70 and the skies are bright, everyone wants to be the shepherd. Everyone wants to be the shepherd then. But when it's a dark night and it's cold and the weather is changing and the wind is howling and the snow is beginning to fly and you look around and a couple of sheep are missing and you hear a wolf out there somewhere in the dark, very few have the intestinal fortitude to be the shepherd then. Who among you will be the ones to step up and deliver the roar? Who among you, young people in particular, will be the shepherds that step up when Iowa, when America, when the world most desperately needs it? This is where we are now. Let's not kid ourselves. We've come through a dark way. We've hardly emerged from the tunnel. We are going to continue to need generation after generation of people to step up and boldly lead. But you cannot lead if you don't know what you believe. It isn't imperative that we all believe the same thing. It isn't imperative that everybody's cut from the same cloth. The reality is, look around this room. While yes, I'm guessing we're all fairly conservative, I would say this, look at the colors, look at the different colors of our skin, look at the different genders, the different ages, the different socioeconomic backgrounds from which we come. This is a microcosm of America. The tapestry of America is comprised of the many threads. And there are threads among us, maybe even in this room, certainly in our communities, that are perhaps faded by addiction. Others that have been frayed by lives of abuse and of circumstances that none of us would have wished on anybody. And yet, frayed or faded as they may be, they are still part of the mosaic, part of this fabric that is the greatness of America. Every one of us woven together, every single one of us contributing in some way to this America. We're all different. It is an imperative that we all be the same. But the greatness of America is made whole by those of us who know what this nation was founded on, being apologists for this, being able to articulate it, being unapologetic about it. Not those who apologize for. An apologist is one who knows what he believes and can defend it. And liberals, frankly, after the snark and the sarcasm, rarely have anything left. You get through about one round, maybe two rounds of a discussion, and you're down to name calling. Be somebody who knows more about what you believe than that, especially you young people. The world is going to depend on it. We're going to pass the baton to you. I'm a guy who believes in the American dream. It's real. It's not theoretical. It's alive and well. I'm blessed to have lived the American dream. I grew up well below the poverty level in a small town, 250 people, in a three-room farmhouse with a family of eight. I shared a room with my three brothers my whole life in northern New Hampshire near the Canadian border in an unheated house. We had two little wood stoves that went out every night. For those of you who live here in the middle of America, you appreciate that the winters can get pretty tough. I say that not to give you a sad song. There's frankly any number of you who've grown up in a similar way. But the greatness of America is one that promises every young person a path and an opportunity that with work ethic, with discipline, with application, that you can be anything you want to be, and this is true. But again, because somebody has sacrificed to make that possible. The American dream is real. It's our job to preserve it. It's our job to defend it. My challenge to you, please, is to seize what you have in your grasp every 4 years. To encourage not only yourselves, but those that aren't in this room, and those that aren't in this party, and those that aren't of our ideology. To find those things that unite us, those values, those core American values of self-reliance and responsibility and liberty that we touched on a moment ago. To find those deep within us because they are innate within us, because they were endowed, not given to us. They were given by our Creator, not by government. This is real. This isn't just lip service. This isn't something cleverly written down on a piece of paper. It was written down, it was recorded and codified because it's real and we know it innately. And so it's our job to seize this. to celebrate this, to preserve this, to fight for it. The American dream is only as real as we the people allow it to be. Because of and by and for the people only works if we the people truly take that seriously. If we the people step up, if we the people are engaged, if we the people seize ownership. And so I encourage you, please preserve this American dream. Seize this power that you have every 4 years to more than even others in America be able to shape that American dream. Turn out being informed and with a sense of conviction and purpose, not as Republicans necessarily, but as liberty-minded conservatives, as people who are Americans, as people who value these things we've just mentioned. Encourage those that are not here and who may not share your ideology to vote their values and not their party. If, in fact, we celebrate our values and those things that unite us, how much greater will the future of America be? Our state motto in Kentucky has a simple phrase. It shows two people shaking hands. One is a statesman dressed in a suit. The other a frontiersman dressed in buckskin, and they're shaking hands. And it says, "United we stand, divided we fall." True enough. True enough. United we stand, and divided we fall. Let me close by saying this. I encourage you to stand united with one another, within the party, outside of the party, sharing core values, celebrating those, fighting for those, being able to articulate those because you've ingrained them not only in yourselves, but in the generations to follow, in your children, in your grandchildren. Talk about these things. Literally and figuratively bind them upon your heart because you know them. And you can speak to them with a sense of conviction that moves people. Because one of the greatest gifts we have that's dying in a world where everybody does this is the ability to look another person in the eye and have a conversation of substance. I pray for my children on a regular basis. I pray for them out loud. I pray for them when I'm not with them. I have 9 children. I think some of you heard that earlier. We had 5 children. We adopted 4 more. We did this to ourselves on purpose, so don't feel sorry for us. We knew what we were doing. We did it anyway. And we're blessed. And I do have 1/3 of my kids are here with me. I have 3 of my daughters down front here with me tonight. This is how it's done. Take your children with you. Take your children with you, whatever it is you're doing. If you're cleaning up a mess, if you're going to a political fundraising, if you're volunteering, if you're fixing something, if you're doing whatever it is you do, pour into them. But the 2 things that I pray for my children are this. It's the same things that I pray for the people of Iowa, for those in Kentucky, and frankly, for the people of America. That in a world where everything is upside down and inside out, and we find ourselves conflicted over things that frankly we don't even understand how we ever got to the point where this was a topic of conversation, let alone something we were supposed to be conflicted over, I pray that my children will have discernment and wisdom, that they will know the difference between what is right and what is wrong. I also pray for a second thing, because more than simply knowing the difference between what's right and what's wrong, I pray that they will have the courage to actually do that which is right. And this is my prayer for each of you, that you will, each of you, independently, collectively, in your families, in your communities, your churches, your businesses, in the state of Iowa, as you shape the nation's discourse politically every 4 years, and frankly in between as people come along the way, that you will know the difference between what is right and what is wrong, that you will be informed with a wisdom and a discernment that comes from knowledge, because knowledge is in fact power. But that additionally, that you also will have the courage, because sometimes that's even harder, to not just know what the right thing is to do, but to do that right thing, to fight for that right thing, to defend that right thing, to zig for that right thing when everyone else seems to be zagging, because that is the greatness of America. I pray that God will indeed bless each and every one of you, and that His grace will continue to shine on the United States of America. Thank you.